Okay. I should start with, I'd like to thank organizer inviting me here. but this time, I'd like to thank Alesha Hamas, and he really did a lot of work for organizing this. Also, I'd like to thank PI for supporting this kind of workshop, which not only bring people from two fields, actually bring people from three fields, from quantum information, kinetic matter, and from string theory together, and to explore new ideas, exchange some new ideas. So I hope there will be more conferences like that in the future. And today, I plan to talk about a recent work on some understanding of a topological order and associate a classification of a topological order. We know that for a long time, we think the symmetry breaking describe all phase and all phase transition. But however, in 1980s, the study of high-T superconductor and quantum Hall state theorists realized that there are many distinct states with the same symmetry. So if two states have if distinct phase have the same symmetry, there's no way to use symmetry breaking to describe it. So therefore, it really suggests that, in particular for quantum Hall state, suggests that there is new kind of order, which is beyond the symmetry calculation. This order is called a topological order. And a topological order is kind of order that cannot be described by symmetry breaking, cannot be described by Lagrange correlation, and cannot be described by the order parameter, and so on. And certainly it's hard to write a paper to describe something by what it is not. So to describe topological by what it is, then one can have this the topological dependent but robust degenerate ground state. That's one feature of topological order. Another is that once you have this degenerate ground state, you can deform the space using Hanergy freedom to generate a non-abelian barrier phase for the degenerate ground states, which actually form a modular transformation, reputation modular transformation. And this probably completely characterized and defined topological order. But it's not really fully explored at this moment. And certainly, this the gapless edge states correspond to a conformal field theory. So one can use the boundary conformal field theory to classify and characterize topological order. And in this conference, we heard a lot of entangled entropy. So there's a topological entangled entropy, which can also be characterized topological order. But those lists actually is more like a property of a topological order than what is a topological order. So we're asking what really is topological order. So what is this internal structure which define the topological order? So here I'd like to start from a more precise definition of a quantum phase. By quantum phase really means a phase at zero temperature, or another way means a ground state of certain Hamiltonian. And suppose we have two states which have energy gap. Then these two states in the same phase, if and only if the two states can be connected by this adiabatic evolution, where gap don't close. Okay. Means there exists a local Hamiltonian such that a state have energy gap. So this is a very tricky point. So I think this may be okay, rather than talking about Hamiltonian. I talk about states. The orthogonal state, which you can find the local Hamiltonian, make this state the ground state with energy gap, and you'll say this state has energy gap. Okay. So, you know, and people in quantum information, discussing this kind of thing, but in a very different language, that we can discretize this time and to, like, you know, Trotter expansion, and to make that into the local unitary transmission, which is also called the quantum circuit. So basically, I will use these two forms interchangeably in this talk. And generally, we call this kind of transformation a local unitary transformation. So the bottom line is that the local unitary transformation is actually an equivalence relation. It's defined equivalence class. And the equivalence class of a local unitary transformation is actually a universality class people in kinetic matter use to describe a quantum phase. So therefore, from quantum information point of view, that to study the phase of matter basis study the equivalent class of a local unitary transformation or equivalent class of a quantum circuit, basically. And there are two kinds of equivalent class. And if you don't have any symmetry, the first kind is what we call the trivial class, means that if a certain state can be transformed into a Dirac product state, then we say this state have a trivial entanglement. Okay. And so actually, all those states, all those Dirac product states can be transformed into each other through this local unitary transformation, that they all belong to the same phase. So therefore, so the state with a short ring entanglement means they can transform into Dirac product states. They all belong to the same phase, and this phase is called a trivial phase. And then there is another class of states which cannot be transformed into Dirac product states. And actually, there's many different class of those in this type, you know. So there's many, so this really means that this feature we call Langevin entanglement. If a state cannot be transformed into the Dirac product states, then we say the state have a Langevin entanglement. It's a definition of Langevin entanglement. And then there's many class of this type. That means there's many pattern of a Langevin entanglement. And this pattern really corresponds different topological order. Now here I want to emphasize one point which is important. That is for the system with a finite size, if you have many, many layers of a quantum circuit, you can transform anything into Dirac product states. It looks like everything is trivial. But here we take a different limit. We take a single size go to infinite limit, then the layer for a quantum circuit go to infinity second. And in this limit, we cannot transform every state into Dirac product states. And the things that we cannot transform, the things that are left is this topological order or a Langevin entanglement. Okay. So so if you don't have any symmetry, the quantum phase of matter actually is this equivalent class of local unit transmission. From this picture, we say that it's actually a pattern of Langevin entanglement. So that's essence of topology order. Yes.
I have a question about the circuit. I mean, if you take the size of the system going to infinity, how does the depth of that surface go to, you know, if the size is it log n or n? Or, I mean, if that n
is. I would say constant.
I mean, say the depth of the circuit is constant, you're saying?
Yes. I mean, the depth circuit, so I don't want to go into this because, thank you for the question.
Okay.
All those statements are conjecture. Nothing proved. And it's precisely because of the question like that. To make things more precise, one had to specify the error. So in a sense, when you have an error, the depth of common circuit do not depend on the system size. And when we want to reduce the error, may increase the depth. But however, the system size dependence is not there. And I think there's a lot of work. There's some work try to make this more precise, but I don't know whether we have enough of a rigorous result to make all this very rigorous. But we have some rigorous result to make this rigorous. But I don't know we have everything or not. But on the other hand, this is really not my type of thinking. So.
Relative to physical Hamiltonian?
Local means a finite patch, you know. So like this local unit, this transmission only act on certain qubits. The number of qubits is a finite, some finite number.
So you
do not depend on
system size. So you're going to define a priori some criterion of locality that doesn't depend on the dynamics? Or?
The dynamics here is implicit in the sense that everything we discuss here is a gap. You know. So this really using this, I think the result that the gap system, the spatial correlation also finite. And so if there is any problem with that, again, then what I discussed here has to be limited to a subsystem where the gap and the spatial correlation are really related. They assume they are related in general. Again, those are details which it's not proven, or maybe somewhat is proven, because I'm not a real expert, so I don't know to which degree it's proven, you know. So the physicists, you know, they are all proven. But to the mathematical physics, I think there's a lot of things to do. Okay. And this local unit, one application of local unit transmission is a wave function normalization. And the idea is that, here I want to introduce a concept of support space. We know that in this region A, the number of degree freedom in the region A is just how many labels do we have. That is for total Hilbert space. But when you have a wave function in region A, they can ask, in this wave function, what is the number of degree freedom contained in the wave function? Which actually is given by the number of non-zero element in the density matrix. No. If you diagonalize the density matrix of in the region A, then it's a non-zero eigenvalue of density matrix tell you how many degree freedom in the wave function in this region A. And clearly that's there's a number of degree freedom in the wave function region A is much less than number of ways we can label the states in the region A. So that means that we can using a local unit transmission try to reduce the label. We don't need so many labels in the region A to label the information in the quantum wave function. So we can use this kind of generalized unit transmission to map between the support space in the region A and the total Hilbert space in region A to reduce effective degree freedom. To be precise, the support space is the following. Consider a wave function, that's total wave function, the I, J, A, B, just a label of quantum states in this each side. This I, J label the state in the region A, A, B label state outside the region A. Then we can view this total wave function as a wave function which only depends on the index in the region A. And the index outside region A just a subscript of the wave function. As we change this subscript, then this the wave function in region A would span a subspace, which we call the support space of region A, which is less than the total Hilbert space in region A. And the mapping U is just a mapping from this total Hilbert space to the support space. And this map reduce the label, number of label, but did not lose any information in the wave function. So this is a key step. Okay. And so this reduced wave function. Actually, the mirror and many other tensor network normalization really are based on this kind of thing. So another application for this more precise definition of top level order is to describe what is top level order. Actually, there's three important issues. One is how to label those different top level order. Now here we say, top level order just equivalent class of a local unitary transformation, but what are they? Can you invent a symbol for each of them? So there's a question, how to give them a name? Okay, we cannot say phase A, phase B, phase C, phase, yeah, we quickly run out of symbols. We have to find some better symbol. We can call them up and down, charm and beauty. And so actually this is the main topic of this talk. We find that we can use a set of tensor which satisfy certain nonlinear algebraic equation to label this equivalent class. Not all of them, but a big set of them. The next question is that the given Hamiltonian, or someone gave me an exact diagonalized or grounded wave function, how do you identify which phase or which tabular order this Hamiltonian or wave function is in? And so that means how to calculate those labels from this wave function. Okay, or from condensed matter point of view, this actually corresponds to calculating a phase diagram. And the tensor network normalization flow is one way to do this. But we don't have very good way to do this. But tensor normalization flow may be one way to do this. Then another thing is that another important issue is that knowing the label, how do you calculate the physical property? Something you can measure. Okay. And this is something kind of work in progress, but apparently they need to generalize the tensor categories here even. So let's consider this labeling problem. And how to label top left order? You say, oh, it's very simple. We can use the whole wave function to label it. That's a, you know. And because wave function, total wave function, everything, of course, is a label. But as a Schrock emphasized, the total wave function have too much information, you know, too much useless information, basically. So the point is how to find a better labeling. So the better labeling can be obtained by using this wave function renormalization. You know, under this wave function renormalization, we can in fact reduce the degree of freedom patch by patch, and further in next level we can reduce it even further. Eventually, the wave function became something simpler. We get the fixed point wave function, and hopefully this fixed point wave function give us a one-to-one label to the topological order. Then this fixed point wave function itself give us a good label for topological order. So this is this kind of idea we try to use here. But however, there is one problem. The fixed point wave function is not fixed. Because what we do is cross-graining. Even lattice is changing. You know, what do you mean by wave function fixed if the lattice is changing? Okay. But however, you know, as we cross-graining, we get the wave function one lattice to another wave function, another lattice to a third wave function, the third lattice, and et cetera. But however, you know, as a wave function approaching, as we do this, the things flow to something fixed. So what really fixed is that it's a relation between different cross-graining became fixed. So therefore, it's better not to say fixed point wave function, it's better to say the fixed point local unitary transformation. It is a local unitary transformation which relates wave function on different cross-graining lattice. This relation is fixed. So just like this, the lattice one, lattice two related by one unit transformation, but the same unit transformation also relate the lattice two, lattice three. Each lattice corresponds to the cross-graining steps. So we try to classify the fixed point local unitary transformation. Okay. And so here is the assumption. We cannot do this for every wave function in a very general setting. So there is a lot of assumption, implicit assumption. I try to make those implicit assumptions explicit. I try to emphasize what we assume. And so first we have to do graph states because we allow the lattice to change. And here, because we consider a system with no symmetry, including translation symmetry, so we allow transformation which is changing lattice in an arbitrary way. So we better to consider a generic graph state. For example, we can have renormalization which change this to this or this to this, you know. So this kind of changes, renormalization is allowed, so we can, this better to consider under this general graph state. Under the graph state, we have n plus one states on each edge, which are labeled by I equal to 0 to n. We also have states, nv states on each vertex, labeled by R. So this we have a state in both vertex on the edge, yes.
About this lattice, I mean, it's not like a wave function for a single particle on lattice, I presume. It's many.
No, it's always many body. I don't think about many.
Lattice doesn't really mean a spatial lattice.
No, lattice means spatial lattice, but it's a spin system. This is a spin system on some random lattice, basically. Graph means random lattice. So we have a spin on the side, also on the edge, and but the random lattice. Some random lattice.
So the spin is some fixed size? Spin is fixed size? Spin a half or?
What do you mean by spin?
You say you have spin?
N and NV is a fixed. So on every edge, we have a 0 to N. N plus 1 state. On every vertex, we have an NV state. This is a fixed. Yes.
Yeah, so I think I have the same question. If you're decimating the lattice, then you're making a map from a larger Hilbert space to a smaller Hilbert space. So how can it be a unitary transformation?
So it's generalized unitary transformation. So the transformation, as a formation point of view, is a rectangular. it's a part of a unit transformation. That's, so it's mapping from bigger space to smaller space, but this, I don't know, maybe...
Can we just say that, so you have a lattice that's your spatial lattice, and then you color in links with different colors depending on which state you're in, and then that makes subgraphs of the original graph, and these transformations run as subgraphs. So within the entire Hilbert space, it's a unitary transformation.
This is really the concept of spot space. Inside this wave function, the degree of freedom containing the wave function is less than the number of labels on this side. And then we want to scramble those four sides into three sides.
Right.
And relabel everything, but such that we still have enough label to label the state in this support space.
Then we don't
lose any information. And here you can see lattice or a chain. From lattice of five side to lattice of from six side to five side. So this is an example of how lattice can change.
So I understand if you have a ground state renormalization, you start with the ground state and you make a transformation where you sum over, you average over the labels that you're getting rid of. So that I understand. I just don't understand why. Maybe I just repeat.
It's a name. We call this a generalized unitary transformation. And pseudo unitary, whatever.
Okay, so you mean something like what people do with ground state density wave renormalization.
Yeah.
Maybe. You don't Flingelman a thing.
Unfortunately, I believe there's a precise word for this in quantum information. I just don't know the word.
What's the precise
word?
Isometry.
Okay,
isometric embedding.
Yeah, isometry. You know, when I see isometry, it's like that, I get scared.
I'm not sure there is a precise name because you're going to a smaller Hilbert space, right?
Yeah.
So what it is, it's a completely positive map.
Yeah.
Okay,
but on the restricted Hilbert space of the one state that you're interested in, it takes you to another pure state. So it's kind of a completely positive map with that spectral property.
So I try to use an improper language to describe my idea here.
Okay,
yeah.
I think it's a related confusion. When you say U infinity, and so you're saying that the unitary transformation converges as you go from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 and so forth?
Yes.
Those are acting on different size spaces. So the rectangular matrices are of different size. What do you mean by equal for those matrices?
Yeah, so it's really, as a matrix, they are equal. But the key is that, for example, this is from 4 side to 3 side. Presumably, here we assume that we can decompose a generic renormalization flow into an elementary one, 4 side to 3 side one. So we always do 4 side to 3 side, 4 side to 3 side, then this way they became.
So the sub-block, your sub-block.
Yeah, exactly. You have many different schemes. Different schemes have your different one, but there's an elementary steps. You can to produce every generic one. Then this is, each step is described by fixed matrix. That's a key, yes.
I think it's much easier to understand as if it's to go the other way. You start from top, you introduce some product state, take a tensor product of your state and a product state, and then you do unity of that.
Yeah.
And then you get your many products.
Yeah, well, I'm also using
that. Isometry is just doing this in the reverse.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's
that's what Gibney has actually showed very explicitly.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's just, we don't need a key, using this picture, just key that we don't need so many labels, we can reduce the labels. But reducing label is kind of like changing the lattice. But that's kind of a picture I'm going to try to bring in here. And so that's why later we can use this changing lattice. Changing lattice actually is doing something like that. It's not something that drastic. You know, that's a key. Okay. And here we want to describe a support space with boundary. So again, the same idea with support space I discussed before. But here we just want to add a boundary. So here we have a region which have a three sides, alpha, beta, and m. That's a region. And they have a boundary, I, J, K, L. So that's a boundary. So what is support space in this region with a fixed boundary? Well, it's just that. We have a total wave function is labeled by this alpha, beta, m, I, J, K, L. This capital gamma is labeled, corresponds to label in other part of graph, which I didn't draw here. And then we can view this IJKL and other label as the index of the wave function and consider wave function only on this degree from inside support space. Then this, as we're changing this subscript, this wave function again span a support space. And the dimension of this support space is called the DIJKL. Because the boundary is fixed, so therefore the dimension depends on this boundary. So we feel this kind of structure is important to characterize some kind of entanglement in a fixed point wave function. We assume the fixed point wave function have a certain structure entanglement, so we can carry on our later calculation. We don't know how to do that generally. So one thing we can do that using this concept is that for the very simple case, with only one vertex and with a boundary IJK is a boundary, the number, the dimension of support space in the wave function may not be NV, you know. Range of alpha is NV, but the dimension of support space may be NIJK, which depends on IJK. So this allows us to shrink the range of alpha from NV to NIJK. So let's do so. Now the alpha acquire a shrink the range, but which depend on the state on the three edge attaching to this vertex. So the range of alpha depend on this state on the edge. Okay. So now let's consider this bigger patch. So we have a two vertex, one edge. The number of a choice of an index is given by this. Because alpha have a shrink range, so we can say how many different possible choice of an index we have using this shrink range is this. And here is a big assumption that the support space in this region happen to be equal to the number of choice of the index. And so basically that is basically this NIJK structure really for every tree-like graph we have a similar thing. So that's a NIJK specify that some kind of structure entanglement in a fixed point wave function. And this is very important information, and we assume that. So for people in tensor category or in conformal field theory, this NIJK is very much like the fusion rule, but not quite. It's a condition, it's less than fusion algebra, but it's very much like a fusion algebra here. So basically, we're using some kind of fusion algebra to specify the entanglement structure in the wave function. This is assumption. Then we want to classify the topological in this type of wave function, basically. Okay. The other thing will be mathematically messier, but conceptually easier, actually. And remember that this so-called fixed point renormalization, unitary transformation, is related to, here now related to two graphs. And we have some fixed point transformation relating the state on graph one and state in graph two. And here the graph on graph two actually, so this is the graph one, this is the graph two. They only differ locally from here to here. Yeah. So this is one elementary local unit transformation. And we just do this local change. And since you assume these are fixed point wave function, these are fixed point local unit transformation, so therefore these two fixed point wave function should be related by local unit transformation. And that really means that the state in the support space here and the state in the support space here have this one-to-one mapping given by a local unitary transformation. And this local unitary transformation is called F-move, actually. If writing in terms of the tensor, it have this tensor form, this kind of F-symbol people introduce in tensor categories and conformal field theory. So this tensor actually can be viewed as a unitary matrix which have index IJKL, whose matrix element is given by M alpha beta N chi delta. So this is unitary matrix, and we have several of them. And also there's a condition that in order to have a unitary mapping, this really unitary, not generalized unitary, pseudo-unitary. So to have unitary mapping between this, the dimensional support space of these two graphs should be the same. So therefore, this NIJK should satisfy this condition. And this is the only condition NIJK should be satisfied. So this is weaker than the fusion algebra condition. And then the most important condition is that, you know, here we just have some unitary matrix. We don't have much thing to say. But actually, this unitary matrix should satisfy certain self-consistent condition. This is because if I, from this graph to this graph, we can reach that through two paths. One using two F move like this, using one F move to here, another F move to here. That's a one pass. Another pass is a three F move. You can use a one F move here, then bring this to here, that's another F move, then another F move. So there's two different paths linking these two graphs. And so using this composition of the two step or three steps, we can get two different local unitary transformations. So actually, this is one unitary matrix, and this is another unitary matrix. The both unitary matrix link the support space of this graph and the support space of this graph. And these two local unitary matrix should be the same. And so they are the same. So that's, this gave us a famous Pandic identity, basically. So the F symbol, this F tensor should satisfy the tensor Pandic identity. And the F move do not change degree freedom. So we need another move which change degree freedom. And one choice is just shrink this to this. That's one move. And actually, this is too complicated. Actually, there's a simpler one. It's using F move, we can reduce this kind of move to from here to here to here. So therefore, you can see we can either remove this bubble, that's a one move, which reduce degree freedom, or we can remove the tadpole, which also reduce degree freedom. So these two moves actually is a pseudo union transformation, which reduce the number of label. But however, they do not change information. So actually both setup works, and we have both. And so in the following, we describe just using this we call the P move. It's like a P. And so for P move is that it's a wave function on this graph. It's related to wave function on this graph. But this is the support space of this graph is dimension one. So dimension one really means this P just a wave function of this in terms of index, J, K, and beta. It's just as function for if of K, J, alpha, beta. It's just a wave function, and it's normalized, so have this condition. So this is I don't want to say more. So actually, one can have a mixed condition. So I will not go into this in more detail. So by using this P move, F move in some mixed fashion, we can get some kind of self-consistent equation, which contain both tensor P and tensor F. Yeah. The idea is very similar, just a different path of doing things, and you can get some consistent condition. And so by play this kind of game, we get a list of the consistent condition, we describe this one, this one, this one, this one, this one. But there's this one is not described, and this one is not described. And we don't know whether this is complete or not. If it is not complete, I can always very easy to think of some other move to obtain more consistent condition until it's complete. But we don't have proof, so hopefully my teacher can show whether this is complete or not. Yes?
In your derivation of the Pentagon identity, for example, you could think of the norm equal to a phase.
Yes, very, very good. And let's see how to say this. The version RK now has no phase, but the new version will have a phase. And basically, all this equal sign became semi-equal, means equal up to a total phase. That's the one thing. So you can indeed have the phase. That's one point. Second point is related to the completeness number. If everything is equal sign, numerically, we check this. This seems complete. In a sense, this equation gave us a discrete solution with no continuous parameter. And even when you weaken this equal sign to equal up to total phase, the same thing is true. You still get isolated solution. That's a second. The third comment is that this kind of phase may be important if you generalize it to fermion case. Actually, that's why we try to add this small phase. So basically, this kind of equation, actually, in some sense, this is very similar to the numerical definition of tensor category. But on the other hand, this is weaker than the then some standard tensor category theory. So I don't know what they call. Zheng Hanwang may want to call it enriched tensor category, whatever. But here I want to emphasize that compared to string net theory, this approach is very similar to the string net approach. But in the string net approach, we make some stronger assumption. We assume the underlying structure is tensor category theory. For example, we assume there's more condition on this NIJK such that this NIJK define a fusion algebra. And there's maybe more condition on F. And so in the string net, there's a more assumption. And here, this list equation is, I think, is a subset of equation we derived for string net. So this is a weaker one, so maybe more general. But however, I want to emphasize, it's only maybe more general. We don't know whether it's really more general, because we're looking for the solution. So far, we only find a string net solution. So maybe they have the same solution, we don't know. Yeah.
In your work on string networks, it was basically isomorphic to the theory of representations of intertwiners of half algebras.
Right.
So all the solutions where there exists a half algebra such that they're intertwiners defined by the N's,
exactly.
The F's, and then it was just the standard theory of
yes.
Representations of half algebras. So do you have an example of something which is outside that? And maybe you just answered the question.
I don't know. I think yes.
You have some intuition or some physical reason for believing there's something which is outside that.
Yes, I believe, yes.
Do you mind saying why?
The intuition not from Boson, from Fermi. So again, this is a very good question. Actually, there's even another generation. I tried to hide something, now I couldn't hide. Here with called the wave function, I make an implicit assumption. The wave function only depends on topology of a graph.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose if two graphs can be deformed to each other, then we say these two graphs would have same amplitude. This is too strong. Mm-hmm. Because in the lattice, each vertex, each link are somewhere in space, they're all distinguishable. We don't have such topological requirement. And so actually, the whole setup can be generalized even further by to have the labeled vertex or labeled edge to make it less topological. And then you'll get some structure even weaker than this set. So that generalization is essential to get the fermionic version. Because fermion requires anti-symmetry. When you have a topological graph and anti-symmetric, there's nothing. You only have a trivial thing. There's no way to combine anti-symmetry with a topology together. But when you have a labeled graph, it's possible. So there's a weakened version of this, which contains fermion solution. And then, however, that can be something we already know. There's new solution which is beyond the tensor category. But however, within purely Bosonic model, we only consider a very simple case. We don't have a new example. And I think maybe there's a new example. But I don't have much intuition in that direction. No, that I don't. Yeah. So basically, what I want to emphasize, in a string net theory, we start with a tensor category theory to define wave function. Then the representations on top of this tensor category give another tensor category, which is double the one describing quasi-particle. From mathematical point of view, we only need the double tensor category to describe quasi-particle. Why we use tensor category to define wave function is totally arbitrary. And here is that one should be able to generalize that. There may be a more natural mathematical structure allow you to define the wave function. And the representation of this mathematical structure gave you a tensor category which describes a quasi-particle. This seems more natural. So this probably is an attempt to move in that direction. Okay, yeah. So this is just some solution. If you, so this choice of a fusion rule
satisfy this condition on N. If you plug into the equation, actually it's a computer program to generate hundreds of equations and simplify them, and you find there's a unique solution like that, which A times to the power minus 1. And this solution, one of them corresponds to the state where, you know, this solution has a string-like interpolation. So this dotted line means that on the edge is 0, and the solid line means on the edge is 1. So we only have two states on each edge. And because n equal to 1 or 0, so there's no additional degree final on the vertex. So we only have a degree on the edge. So then from, if just follow the thick line, this is like a string-like state. And the wave function is that we only have loops. This fusion rule means that we only have loops. And all the loop equal to 1, then that gives us z2 states. And another solution, the old loop equal to minus to number of loop, that's amplitude, or wave function, that gives us Samian theory. And then we can have a little generalized fusion rule making this n11 equal to 1, so that means you allow this 3-1 together on one vertex. And then you get this string-like state. And if you plug in, if you're using this fusion rule and generate a solution, this nonlinear algebra equation only have one solution here. This happened to be this Fibonacci theory. Yeah. And there may be solutions, but we have to see. Yeah. So to summarize, that's I think here I try to emphasize that the mathematical definition of the quantum phase is a equivalent class of a local unit transformation. And using this picture, we see that the state which can be transformed into the dual partner states correspond to the short-range topology order, or short-range entanglement, which really corresponds to trivial topology order. And the non-trivial one corresponds to this long-range entanglement. So this is the key. And so using this framework, we can get this data to characterize this equivalent class. The important thing is that we should be able to calculate I think now we have exact soluble Hamiltonian for every state to construct this way. And so the big question is that can we calculate the property from this data? I believe we can do that, but some work needs to be done. Okay.
Thank you.
What do you mean by plaquette variables?
So you have variables on the links and on the vertices.
Oh, yeah. That's a very good question. I don't know whether in this case have a plaquette important or not. I don't know. But this issue became more important when you consider the 3D dimension. I want to emphasize here we're looking at the 2D topological space. In the 3D, I think it's more natural to add vertex edge plaquette. And yeah, here I don't know whether we can add anything when you have plaquette variable. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Is braiding defined in these series?
Yes, but implicitly. And in a sense, because we can do a 2D case, all the graphs are planar. So they have a canonical framing. So because all the graphs have canonical framing, so you don't need to explicitly specify that. And in a sense, in the tensor category, there's some other, this R matrix is not here. There's a reason that we have a canonical framing. I believe when you want to use a similar approach to do 3D topological phase, and you need there's an additional structure should enter. So this R matrix and this hexagon that they may appear.
I have one
fair
question. So do you have any intuition as to the gap restraints? Do you think it can be this framework can be generalized to the state, or this is really totally for the gap?
Yeah. For gapless space, I hope I have a translation symmetry. You know, for gapless system without translation symmetry, like a random system, I don't know how to think. And So when you have a translation symmetry, then you have to redefine this local unit transformation. So the local unit transformation cannot be defined here. It's too arbitrary. So this you have to, the local unit transformation should also preserve translation symmetry. So you have a much restricted local unit transformation. And then there's an issue, I think, the stability of a gapless space under this local unit transformation would define a gapless space. And yeah, so that's all I can say. But, and you know, at the moment, I think the we try to understand for gap system with the symmetry what happens. So after that, maybe gapless system with the symmetry. We have to really, without symmetry, it's hard to think gapless question. So if you understand the this symmetric local unit transformation better, that from there, that's maybe more natural to go moving to the gapless system.
Not very clear to me what is the relationship between the classification of the phases from the ground state wave function, from this wave function point of view, the relationship with respect to Hamiltonians. Because somehow phase diagrams are not just a property of the wave functions, but are property of wave functions that are ground states of that family of Hamiltonians.
Yeah, that's right.
If we change the model, we have a different.
Yeah, this is a very good question, and this is a big assumption here. I relate to Daniel's question. That's here we consider gap state. So we assume there exists a Hamiltonian which makes this so-called gap wave function of one state and with a gap. And certainly the choice Hamiltonian is not unique. So here I make a big assumption that no matter what your choice, the statement remains to be valid. So this is really a very strong assumption here.
So I'm wondering, aren't you losing something? Because, for instance, for normal phases, you know, the distinction, so in the Ising chain, with that Ising Hamiltonian, you have a phase transition between the two phases, but if you add some other parameters, you could get around in a bigger parameter space.
Yeah.
But you still want to say that they are different phases, and you say, oh, because they are different.
No, that's a symmetry. That's a symmetry, yeah. Because the symmetry class changed, the definition of phase changed.
Right. So
here, I think this is a very good question. We consider a state, not consider Hamiltonian, really because we believe that the property discussed here do not depend on Hamiltonian, at least in a perturbative way. It's a universal property. So if you add, suppose we have one Hamiltonian which has this property, then any perturbation of the local perturbation of Hamiltonian would have same property. So that's why the Hamiltonian seems to play less role here. That is because all those properties like fraction statistics, Gaussian degeneracy, they do not depend on any local perturbation of Hamiltonian. So that's also why for gapless states, the symmetry is important because to have a gapless state which is stable against any random perturbation of Hamiltonian, that seems very unusual. So the more ordinary question is for gapless space, whether it's stable against certain translation invariant perturbation or not. So if you limit yourself to the translation invariant class, then to start a gapless system would be much more reasonable. But that's why I need to generalize this to the translation symmetric local unit transformation and how to classify them. You know, that's kind of.
Is there a parameter in here analogous to a quantum dimension?
Yes, and I didn't go through this. I didn't write down. It's in the paper. That's a, you know, here I only discuss the local unitary transformation. I didn't discuss the wave function. The next question, once you find a T and F, can you reconstruct the whole wave function? The answer is yes. You'll start with a little graph with just one loop. Now, you have to specify the amplitude for one loop. We have only one loop, that's one edge. You have I index. You have AI, so amplitude for each I state. Then from AI alone, you can reconstruct the whole wave function using F and P. And this AI is analog to the quantum dimension because it's just an amplitude for one loop. But on the other hand, however, I have to say that this is in the string level language, is a quantum dimension of a tensor category which you use to construct wave function. This is not quantum dimension to define process party, that's a totally different thing. And then to say quantum dimension quantum particle, this is something kind of work in progress. We don't know how to do that. But I believe using this framework, you can construct the quantum particle excitation, and there should be quantum dimension for the quantum particle. But yeah, that I don't know how to do that at the moment. Yes.
Thanks, Jörgen, again.